Good evening, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Super Deluxe Gamescast. It is Thursday, April 18th, and as you can see, if you're watching the live stream here, I am in a new house. I got a new little office situation happening down here.
Have we solved the poo feet? John, have we solved the shower problem?
Oh, no, actually, that's still a major problem. Very fucking unhappy with USAA. Very unhappy with USAA. We're deathly afraid to flush our toilets.
It's jarring seeing you like properly lit instead of like in the dark hour or whatever from your previous.
Once he gets his key light up and running, yeah, he's going to be. It's no longer like view from inside John's enclosure.
Yeah, it's no longer from inside my mind. Mm-hmm. But yeah, no, things are definitely super stressful right now. We're having major plumbing issues. We don't have a working washer and dryer. So I did a run outside in 90 degree weather and I still have not been able to shower because I don't have any clean clothes to change into. So, it's good times here.
I'm sorry that your move has been so stressful, but the house is lovely, John.
The house is lovely, but I will be honest with you, I have not been this stressed in very long.
Yeah.
In a very, very long time.
You'll make it, bud. You'll make it.
That's just what happens when you move. I don't think anyone's ever moved to a new place and gone like, that was stress-free.
Yeah. This is especially stressful, though, because... I didn't even tell you guys about the fungus in the crawl space. Which is going to cost?
Hell yeah, dude! We got fungus
thousands of dollars to fix. The pipe that burst is going to be like $15,000. We don't have a working washer and dryer. Like, it's just been really great here, and I am super stressed and on edge as a result. So nobody fucking pissed me off tonight.
At least you also no longer live within. Or you're not like 45 minutes away from theoretically the nearest laundromat. Yeah.
Everything. So,
I mean, this is just a normal day in The Sims. Like,
yeah. Yeah, absolutely. But my personal woes aside, Matt Piscatella is here for the first time in years.
Yeah. Matt, what's going on, buddy?
Well, you know, I think we should start talking about how great the combat was in The Witcher 3.
Yeah, you know that Matt rolls up, not missing a beat. I love it.
And there he goes.
I mean,
I can't tell if like that's where we left off the last time we saw Matt.
I had like a weird disconnect. Internet issue.
You got to check the internet at your new house too, man.
Yeah, I don't know what happened.
Your plumbing's not the only thing fucked up.
Weird. John, has it been that long since Matt been on that The Witcher 3 had just come out, or are you still complaining about Witcher 3 combat in the year 2024?
Why can't we have both? Why can't we have both? Yeah. Actually, now that Matt is back, I want to have a heart-to-heart conversation about steak fries.
Oh.
That's what I want to do, dude. The crispy, flaky... No,
there's
Matt,
no such thing as a crispy steak fry. That's
yes, there is.
That's why they suck.
Steak fries are to fries what The Witcher 3 is to good video game combat. These are pears in heaven. It's also like the opposite of Sonic, meaning that it's actually good, whereas Sonic the Hedgehog is actually bad.
You could have also. I was like, is this the game or the restaurant? Either way, same. Fine.
Hey, Sonic has tater tots. Okay, I'm just throwing that out there.
How would you know that? You would have to have gone to a Sonic.
Yes.
Oh. Frequently.
Tater tots. Are they tater tots there, or are there potato barrels? Because I understand tater tots.
Potato barrels?
Tater tots are trademarked. So, like, if you go to Disneyland. They? Yeah, and you go to Disneyland or whatever, and you get the thing at the food fest. It's like whatever with potato barrels.
I am now only ever calling them potato barrels. That's so good.
That makes sense because we have, I don't know if you guys have Taco Time there. I think it's more of a Northwest thing. Brit knows Taco Time. It's basically Taco Bell. And they have Mexi fries and they are literally just McCain tater tots. I could never figure out why they just fucking call them tater tots.
Well, you see, all tater tots are actually tater shorts and then all French fries are tater longs. So...
Actually, it's actually been so long since they came out that they're now tater adolescents. So
And steak fries are like steak with two C's. Like, how is that what the kids say?
Yeah, that's how
they've moved on to Q's at this point, man. Like,
from now on, I'm just calling
them the Brazil fries. Booty lift. What's a French of potatoes.
How much I've missed Piscatella in my life. Like,
so here's the deal with steak fries. We can all agree, regardless of your feelings on them, we can all agree that they're better than McDonald's fries.
Well, that's not a high bar.
How would you know?
They're also better. They're also better. They're also better than Burger King fries. They are not better. They are not better than seasoned curlies from Arby's. I will give you that.
I do think you have to say fries after curly. I don't think you could just call them curlies.
No, they're seasoned curlies, Derek.
No.
Seasoned curlies.
John prefers them when they're short and curlies.
We should probably talk about video games.
Yeah, let's talk about video games.
We are off to a start.
So a quick public service announcement for people picking up Eudin Chronicle 100 Heroes, which is playable on Saturday. Do yourself a favor and get the PC version. Apparently the Switch version and the PS5 version look and run like booty butt cheeks.
Yeah, they'll get fixed in a patch, I'm sure.
I'm sure they will, but the there's a side-to-side with the PS5 and the PC version, and it is dark.
Brutal.
Well, just on you, I already got it on PS5 when I backed it on Kickstarter.
Well, Finn, I have bad news. The PS5 version maxes out at 1080p and has a bilinear filter.
None of that means anything to me. I'm just going to enjoy it on my portal. I don't care.
All right, video games, guys. Normally, Jeff came up with a really good laundry list of topics, considering our guest here. Did we want to start with what we were playing?
Let's start with what we've been playing. Start with the good fluff, man. Aw. Hang on. Finn's family is on screen.
Aren't we cute as hell?
That's because we're in a hotel right now going on a work trip, so I'm just calling in.
Oh, no.
Oh no!
Yeah, I agree. I
absolutely agree. I go.
Anyway, video games.
Yeah.
All right. Jeff, why don't you go first?
I've been playing nothing but Dragon's Dogma 2. Derek and I did a very fun review of that, so you can definitely check that out. I'm 80 hours in now, just wrapping up New Game Plus. This is probably the only time I've ever immediately started a new campaign in any kind of game. It's just all my thoughts are already out there. It's just
game went on for like an hour about this game.
Yeah,
it's a lengthy review.
It's just fun. I'm still unlocking new vocations, which are basically classes. Like I'm doing Magic Archer now, which I think is what Derek did a lot of.
I love Magic Archer.
It took a bit. I was like, I don't know if this, and then I got some more skills and I'm like, okay, I can like hit them in the face with an iceberg with one of my arrows. Like, it's good shit. Like the game is just wonderful. I missed so much on my first playthrough and I thought I was so thorough. There's just so many cool little secrets and things hidden to find. The game has its problems. It's got some jank. The performance is well documented, but like everything else just trumps that. And people should play Dragon's Dogma 2.
Jeff, I heard Capcom went woke. How can you like Dragon's Dogma?
Oh man,
I
know.
It makes
it
better.
Yeah, it makes us stronger.
Let me ask you about this. I got a theory, and I don't know if this is, I don't know how good this theory is, but like Dragon's Dogma 2 and Helldivers 2 in particular, right?
Yeah.
It's, okay. I've been using the phrase immersion gameplay. It's the wrong phrase, but what I mean by that is like games that let you get into shenanigans. And I think that there's a shenanigans sales correlation.
Yeah.
There's something about the more shenanigans you can get into in a game, the less a game like dictates a story to you and the more you can kind of create your own dumb story in a game. Those seem to be the games that are really popping now.
I feel like it's why a lot of these little multiplayer, like online multiplayer indies, you're like your Lethal Companies. Mm-hmm. I mean, starting with like Among Us, right? But then like your Lethal Companies and your what's the content warning? Is that the one that's blowing up right now? Like that's why they're doing so well. Is it's that same like just letting people be silly little guys?
And that's like
looks great.
You know, I love Bethesda games, but like man, they aren't known for their dramatic narrative, right? Like. Why is Skyrim so popular? Shenanigans. Why is Grand Theft Auto 5 sold like 150 million copies. Shenanigans, right? Like that's Matt nailed it with that one. Like, and Dragon's Dogma 2 has some awesome shenanigans.
That's a shenanigans ass game for sure.
Yeah.
I've been working on this math, right? I can't quite get the math to work out yet. But when I'm talking to people, I'm like, you know what? It's more shenanigans in your games if they're really going to be able to be viral, to take off, because you get the, you not only get like the fun gameplay with your friends or whatever, but then you get the viral stuff that comes out on TikTok or whatever that really kind of builds momentum for that game. It, I don't know. There seems to be something there about that right now.
Yeah. Well, and I think like, you know what? Dragon's Dogma 2, it's like there's a lot of mystery to it. There's a lot of things when you're playing the game, they can either be fascinating or frustrating as hell. Derek and I talked about there's one riddle that you have to do for a quest, which makes you remember where you found the first of 100 or 220 collectibles, because that, like, so the riddle is like, go back to where you found the first one, as if you remember where you found the first of 220 80 hours ago. And I'm doing New Game Plus and I'm trying to do this, and actually it's where you found the first one on your first playthrough. So but like, even like, I don't know if Matt, if you've heard about Dragon's Plague, but there's basically like a, it's basically Dragon COVID. There's a disease in the game.
They put
that
a
can
pandemic
be
in the game that spreads through multiplayer.
Yeah, it spreads by summoning other players' creations, basically, and they can infect your own party, and it can spread to the entire town in the game and could basically nuke it and kill everyone. And you can't go back. And the devious thing is that the only hard save state in the game is resting at an inn, and that is specifically what triggers the illness to spread. So it's, but like, I saw this even for people not playing the game. A lot of people were talking about this. There was articles about it. Like, Dragon's Dogma 2 has this mysterious illness. Here's the symptoms to watch for. And it's just like, it definitely got people talking. And I think that stuff also is like really crucial for games. That's all I've been playing. It's a fun ass game.
Here's a question to go off of that is, because we always talk about every game is made better with a grappling hook. And I think it's because grappling hooks lend themselves to shenanigans.
That's so a good grappling hook is a shenanigans mechanic. Like, so, this is a whole field of study we could get into if we really break it down.
Mm-hmm. The just cause continuum.
Yeah.
Or there you go.
Is just cause two a good game?
Grappling hook, you're good.
Yeah.
There was, I think it was a couple of years ago where it felt like every game in like that June E3 period, every trailer had a grappling hook, and I was like, this is good. Oh, and Monster Hunter Rise, right? Like,
oh yeah, had grappling hooks that hook onto nothing. In fact, Finn, what you been playing, bud? When you're not traveling?
Go next.
Oh man,
already has Finn. Okay, you're next.
So, I still Final Fantasy VII Rebirth.
God,
just
Finn, finished the game.
Tell me not to stop. Tell me to stop traveling. It's fine.
Yeah.
I just beat Unicorn Overlord. I just beat Pepper Grinder. I got all the hidden coins. Yeah, Matt knows, fellow Pepper Grinder aficionado. And I just finished this Steam game that I was part of the Nintendo Indie show that they just had in part of the Rapid Fire segment. It's called Bzzzt, B-Z-Z-Z-T.
Oh, yeah.
It's just another, like, very fast-paced, high-precision action platforming game, and that was a delight. Between Unicorn Overlord 7 Rebirth and Like a Dragon Infinite Wealth, like, my RPG stuff has been so omnipresent that it's just really nice to jump into these smaller bite-sized just action games. They just hit the spot, so it's good stuff. And then I just downloaded Balatro. So that's gonna be a problem.
Oh, that
that's gonna be a problem.
Card game.
It's been nice knowing you, Finn.
Right? So and then I picked up Super Princess Peach, not Super Princess Peach, the Princess Peach Showtime or something, whatever it's called, to play with Anna. So
I'm gonna commit an act of heresy here and say that I tried Balatro and was bored to fucking tears. But to each their own, I guess.
Kind of with you on that one.
Yeah, like I don't get it. Like I just don't. Like, then again, like, Matt, I don't know about you, but I'm not a poker guy. I'm not a card game guy. I don't care about any of that. I played it for maybe 10 minutes and I was like, this is boring. And I deleted
it. I respect it. Like, I get why it's good, but also, yeah, kind of bored me to tears too. But I get it. I respect people that like it.
God, that's like a set of words I wish I heard from more people.
See, like, here's the thing, man.
That's just the response. Like, I don't like it, but I get it.
No, you know what? I don't respect people who like it, and I'll tell you what. I'm just kidding.
That's John.
Why would you say this about me and Britt in such a blatant act of homophobia?
You know exactly.
Yeah, John, you Ziegler-ass looking bitch.
You know, Finn, do you have any idea what I can make happen to you?
Yeah,
earthquake. It's a magnitude 80 move.
John sounds like he's about to give us the Taken speech.
Oh my God.
I fucking love you two dweebs.
No, I've been I've been replaying Final Fantasy 16 because I want to do like the whole game. I want to do the whole base game and then Echoes of the Fallen and then the Rising Tide. Thank you, by the way. So our good friend of ours at Square sent me a code for the Rising Tide. Greatly appreciate it, especially since I didn't know it was coming. Like, I didn't ask for it. It just kind of came. It wound up in my DMs. Especially since money is a little thin right now, having moved into a new house. So thank you. Appreciate that, friend. I should be wrapping that up this weekend. And then I did the Final Fantasy 14 7.0 benchmark on my PC, on this brand new PC that I built. And so they say that with a score and like, Derek, you know how this shit works. Like, it runs the trailer for the game and it gives you a score at the end of it. You know, it'll say like, okay, you know, this score means your PC will run it at this level. This score means this, this score means that. With the PC that I put together with Derek's assistance and advice, the max score is 15,000. I hit it.
Well, what that means is you need to bump your settings up even higher. So
yeah, no, it's you know, so what it means is it says that I will, and by the way, when I, the reason there's a benchmark is because 7.0 is getting like a big graphics update.
I've seen a few like comparisons people have posted, and it's a nice little repolish for sure.
It's definitely noticeable.
I don't go here, but you know, it's nice to see it prettied up a little bit.
It's definitely noticeable, especially if you get close to like characters' faces or like the grass.
Hair and,
you
looks know, a lot yeah, better.
The hair looks yeah, a lot better. And so with my score, it says that your PC will be able to run this easily at max settings. And I wasn't running it at max settings, so I'm gonna bump those. Those are rookie numbers, and I gotta pump those numbers up. These are rookie numbers in this racket.
John's a big PC Chad now, or what?
No, absolutely. No, Derek converted me. No, dude, no, I'm serious.
Yeah.
Derek converted me.
Between like, the Steam Deck and having a decent PC and also access to my Steam account and hundreds of games he didn't have to buy. Yeah, John's like, converted.
Like, no, dude, I am fully Steam Deck pilled. Like, my Steam Deck is my main console. Period. Like, that's what it is. So I am very excited about that, but yeah, no, I'm going to finish up Final Fantasy 16, my third replay of this game, and it came out less than a year ago, and then I'm going to jump right into Aiden Chronicle. That's what I got.
Yeah, Matt, what you been playing recently?
My trials and tribulations with MLB The Show are pretty well known. This year they went pretty heavy into the packs and more what kind of like the Madden and FIFA teams does, and kind of turned me off a little bit. So I've actually been going with an indie renaissance. And let me tell you, I got a few. I'm gonna tell you people to go get them if you like these kind of. Okay, here we go. So I wrapped up White Shadows. If you like Limbo, yeah. If you like Inside, creepy as hell. Few hours long.
Oh, I do
long,
like that.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Go get that Neversong, another kind of kooky indie thing where you're kind of building piano tunes while running around with your little, I don't know. It's really neat. Go check that out. Return to Grace on Game Pass, an exploration sci-fi. It's like a 70s sci-fi novel. It's a lot of walking sim, 3-4 hours long, really fun. Go check it out. I got the Steam Deck as well, and so I've been really diving into Shadows Over Loathing.
Ooh.
If you've the Loathing games are fantastic.
I love them so much.
Black and white stick figures, but funny as hell and really well done. Get that. Lost Ember. I don't know if you've heard of this one. It's exploration as well. You're like this wolf, but you're reincarnated from some ancient thing, and you had a you fought some things, and you got turned into a wolf, and there's a dot that talks to you, and you run around, and skies open up, and stars fall. And it's pretty kooky. And then I fired up Harold Halibut, which, my God, this stunning art. And stunningly boring in every other way, but the art is so incredible. The handcrafted claymation of these characters is like nothing I've ever seen before, but also like just such a chore to play. But they're great too. Check those. I mean, that's a lot. But yeah, I've been really digging getting into these games that I've been, you know, kind of putting off for a while. That are more bite-sized type experiences because I'm old and I only got so many years left. Final Fantasy, me probably not going to fit too well, but 4 hours I could do that before I fall asleep on the couch after Wheel finishes up, you know, because you got to get Wheel. And Jeopardy's got to come after Wheel. I don't know if any of you freaks are in a TV market where they put Jeopardy on before Wheel. Who the hell does that? Wheel goes before Jeopardy. The Wheel is the warm-up to the Jeopardy. That's my position.
That's pretty backwards.
And I'm sticking to that. Mm-hmm.
That's a competing station group for me, though, so.
Oh, they're not on the same channel where you are.
Yeah. Derek would like to remind us that his views are his own and do not represent.
Yeah, do not represent whichever Louisville-based TV station I happen to work for that I never name. But clearly not the NBC affiliate.
I love hearing about the indie games because when I hear people complain that all games are the same and like you know the space is so boring and like they're tired of like the Ubisoft checklist and stuff like that, I'm like, oh my god, go play some of this stuff. Like there's some crazy shit out there, and I love hearing about
it. Other games to play. Yeah. Like we just had a Nintendo Indie Direct, and most of them were like very cozy style games. Mm-hmm. And even if you aren't into that, there was another huge indie direct like last week, the III one that had a completely different batch of all different types of games to play. Like there's always something. You just are mad that they're not AAA blockbusters.
And give me those 5-hour games, because like I think it's funny when they put a marketing bullet point like, you know, 100 hours long. I'm like, that's a good way to get me to not buy that video game.
Yeah, that's why I love so the two I played. Yeah.
Yeah, well, like discoverability is so challenging, right? Like trying to find these games that they're not in the showcase, or you don't have like an influencer you follow, or you don't find the tweet or whatever. They're just really hard to find. But when you really dig in, there's a couple of places that are doing it pretty well. But yeah, it's really tough to find. These are gems, though. You know, people, when they find them, they, you know, it's like finding a little bit of gold.
So, yeah. Matt, I have a question for you. Where's Silksong?
The instant disgust.
Right. So here's listen. You remember the E3 of dreams?
Yeah. I do actually.
Okay, and everyone was losing their mind over Shenmue 3,
Final Fantasy VII Remake, and the Last Guardian.
Yeah,
the Last Guardian. Two of those three games. Let me tell you, they didn't sell so hot. You know what I mean? Well, and like Silksong's one of these games where I feel like the hype is so far ahead of what it might actually, maybe it will be the biggest game in the world. I don't know. But like, man, the hype level for this game in some areas, the internet is wild.
So here's my fear about Hollow Knight, Matt. Like, look, Team Cherry is very talented. Silksong. Hollow Knight was a great fucking game. Great Metroidvania, right? And I'm sure Silksong will be the same. Silksong awesome. Is also going to be a great fucking game. But there is no fucking way after the manner in which people have built this game up, there is no fucking way it is going to be received as well as Hollow Knight, simply because of the soft bigotry of high expectations. right? Like part of the reason that people are so excited about this game is because it was announced, what, 5 years ago, and nobody's seen it since. And when it comes out, guess what, guys? It's going to be a video game. It's going to be a great video game, but it's going to be a video game. And it's not going to be for everyone. And I feel like people are... Like, every time we do this, and we've done it before with games like Shenmue 3, right? Or like The Last Guardian. Like you said, Matt, we build these games up to be like the second coming of Jesus Christ. And when they get here, Shenmue 3 wasn't even very good. That game kind of sucked shit.
That's because Shenmue 1 and 2 weren't very good.
Thank you, Derek. Yes. Thank you. Finally, someone willing to speak the truth. But... We got to stop doing this to ourselves. Like, I mean, you can't, you know, and by the way, and Matt, you tell me if you agree with me. Everybody was like, oh my God, not only is Silksong going to be shown at the Indie Direct, it's going to shadow drop the same day. I know it. The fucking stars are telling me that. And it's like, guys, this is not showing up at an Indie Direct. And it sure as shit is not going to be shadow dropped. Like...
Yeah, and it's just funny because, like, this game could be great. It could be, a 90. It could get all kinds of love. But how do you meet these expectations that are just so far out in front of the skis? And for no reason, no fault of the developers, no fault of the showcases it's been in. Like, it's just sometimes games just get this weird groundswell of, like, over expectations, and it's like impossible to meet them sometimes. I hope it does. I hope it really is the greatest game ever made. But man, just you know, folks, just take it easy. The game will come out. It'll be fun. Take a breath.
Let's face it. It's not going to be the greatest game ever made. The greatest game ever made came out in America in October 1994, and it was called Final Fantasy III in the U.S., Final Fantasy VI in Japan, and now everyone knows it as Final Fantasy VI worldwide.
Are you you're a turn-based Final Fantasy guy? Is that what I'm taking from that?
You could say that. That's one thing that has been said about me in the past.
I'm just a Final Fantasy guy. I'll take turn-based.
I'll take dating games. I'll take a Final Fantasy dating sim, Square.
No, you wouldn't.
Sure. No, that's the only dating sim I would play. Final Fantasy dating sim. And only it would be named something really, really crazy because it's Square Enix. So it would be Final Fantasy, Miseria, Memoria, Onion Knight Tales, EX Blast, Baja, Tropical Blast 3, Exumius. Like that's
you just went into Taco Bell drinks at the end there.
Got taken off the rails there.
Holy shit. No, Roronado got it. Final Fantasy Kissidia. That's fucking perfect.
That's pretty
holy
good.
Shit. That's really fucking good, Roronado.
I've never played a Final Fantasy game.
Totally fine. I'm not going to do... Yeah. John's going to do this big thing, but, like, totally fine.
No, I'm not going to say anything.
You just looked like you were having PTSD for a moment.
For a minute, I was back in a rock. Back in the sand. I don't want to talk about
it. I guess I'm last. So I can be real quick, because the only thing I've been playing over the last... like 2 weeks, because we didn't get to do a show last week. We just made John stream fucking anime capitalism game. I have been playing Super Robot Wars Original Generations. It's a PS2 game. Never came to the US. It got a translation patch a couple years ago. I'm famously a big Super Robot Wars sicko. I'm a big tactics game sicko. I'm an anime sicko. I love giant robots. It's just
you have never mentioned
combination
this to me or
of things. But it's just it's good. It's fun. It's a rare one of these games that's actually challenging, because most Super Robot Wars games are basically like taking action figures and making them hit together. Right? They're like, hey, we got Gundam, we got Evangelion, we got like the famous thing, you know. So they want you to play the whole thing so you can see all of it. But the games where they just do original stuff and don't do any licensed stuff, they can kind of feel free to like make it a little bit more of a challenging tactics RPG for me. And I love those kinds of games. And again, as mentioned, also love anime aesthetics and love giant robots. So it's a winner. But that's all I'm doing. I just needed a break from like the onslaught of giant, like brand new game of the year level RPGs that we've been hit with over and over and over again. I needed comfort food. After this is done, I'll probably hit up Yakuza or something. But oh,
not sure you already played the new Yakuza.
No, not yet. I need to hold out for Dragon's Dogma. I know, but Dragon's Dogma was right on the horizon. And what if I didn't finish Yakuza before Dragon's Dogma came out?
You would have had a fucking moral crisis.
I wouldn't have worked. So
I know quite a few people who played Infinite Wealth, Rebirth, and Persona 3 Reload back to back, not expecting, I think other than Persona, they did not expect Infinite Wealth and Rebirth to be like 70 hours plus.
Yeah. Oof. So yeah, that's what I'm playing. Robots. Big robots.
Well, now that we got that out of the way, Matt, tell us why video games are dying or not dying, or maybe somewhere in between. No, I'm just kidding. So Jeff actually did have a really good list of topics, because Jeff, more than I think anyone else on this podcast, is a man of nuanced intellectual, intellectual and logical thought.
You are really gassing this man up.
I really respect Jeff. Can I borrow $100, Jeff?
Please. As soon as I get it,
I don't have laundry.
Damn it. I literally smell like ass. No, so we've actually got, Jeff, you had that big list of topics. Why don't you grab something from there? Because Matt here is renowned throughout the industry for his wisdom. And the thing about Matt is that nobody ever gets mad at him. None of the chuds ever get mad at Matt for providing reasonable sound takes on the state of the video game industry and the business they're in.
Nobody pounding on the doors of his Twitter account asking why would you say that console gaming is dying and we're all doomed?
No, nobody's ever blamed Matt for their game slightly underperforming sales wise. It's Matt, what an idyllic, just peaceful lifestyle you must lead on social media.
It's been weird lately, for sure.
It's been weird. It's been weirder than normal, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. People are in the feels about some stuff. It's fine. It's fine. Video games, man. They're supposed to be fine. I remember, when I was a kid, it was like in the 80s, all right, before all y'all were born. And we were like, how cool is it going to be someday? Like, everyone's going to play games. We can all talk about games. It'd be so cool. Everyone's going to be in a game. Man, I don't know. We had more fun and fewer people in games, let me tell you.
Yeah, we sure did, actually. We sure did.
It's
a good thing.
It's funny because a lot of those people, a lot of those same people who were like, I can't wait till everyone plays games, like, found out that women play games, and it would like, not like that. Not like that. Yeah. Take it back.
Fortunately, we do have all that, though, because if you look at the breadth and the depth of content, like, there is something for everybody. But there is just like a really, it's always just a very small minority of folks that want everything for themselves, and everything not targeted to them is a threat somehow. Whatever, like, it's a very, very small portion. They're just a very loud portion, unfortunately, but it is what it is. What are you going to do?
Yeah.
For example, there's been a lot of discussion online and offline about kind of the slow, I'm not going to say death, but kind of the slow eclipsing of physical games as opposed to digital games, right? And I think, Matt, only in the last couple years we've seen the pendulum start to shift in favor. What is that noise?
What noise?
Oh, it just sounds like you're in a vacuum cleaner.
Look, all I know is I still have not gotten over the betrayal that Alan Wake 2 and Hellblade 2 are not going to be physical.
So, well, it's interesting that you mentioned that, because Matt, correct me if I'm wrong, but only in the past couple of years we've seen the pendulum kind of shift to digital sales as opposed to physical sales. And like Finn just said, publishers see the writing on the wall. Look at the Steam Deck. There's no such thing as a physical game for the Steam Deck, right? You download all your games. Same thing with Steam. You download all your games. And with the advent of things like the Steam Deck, where you can take these huge libraries on the go, it's one of the things that won me over. kind of the march towards digital has been slow but inexorable. And Matt, everybody seems convinced that this is a bad thing, but I don't think it is.
Well, it depends. Yeah, it depends. So, like, if you go back to 2012, we were looking at about 3% digital, right? It was a very small portion. Every publisher just had one person stuck in the corner on the floor that was the digital person. And now, like, you know, now we're looking for some platforms, you're looking over 80% digital. Some are, you know, 60, 70. Some are just getting to 50. NPC, like you said, it's 99%. Digital now. Like Starfield had a little bit of a bump, but you know, it was like 98.5 digital when that happened. But yeah, it's so the idea is, and what we're really seeing, what's up? What we're really seeing, I think, is that convenience is becoming king, right? Like the ability to access content anywhere you go, play with who you want, where you want, when you want, on what platform you want. That seems to be what's really winning. And it's not so much physical versus digital, but it's that convenience factor that people really seem to be leaning in on. And is it bad? I mean, it's bad for some folks. It's, you know, you really want to make it easy for people to give you money. And if some people want or prefer a physical thing, then we should provide them with that. In my opinion, it helps the market. But, you know, when you're talking about margins, they're a little bit better on the digital side. There's more flexibility there. You're not beholden to try to like reduce prices if the game doesn't sell physically on a store shelf. You know, so there's all these reasons why this is going. And like you said, it's been a slow move from 2012 on, slow and bigger and bigger digital over time. And, you know, maybe 2027, 28, we see like that final big shift. And then, you know, Nintendo will be the last folks standing with a physical.
We got our carts. We're not letting go of our carts.
Yeah, I mean, they're so super committed to retail and to like families being able to share a physical game and you know, targeting gifting and mom. Like they have a little bit different approach than say an Xbox or a PlayStation, right? So
when I think
it'll be a little bit slower, but
well, and Matt, like I think they can do that, right? Because Nintendo is not trying to compete with Xbox or PlayStation or PC. Like they're doing
their own thing.
I feel like it also helps when it's like proprietary storage formats, right? That like you have the market on and you get to sell off to you know, other publishers to put their games on. Like it's just a different margin versus if Nintendo was just using Blu-ray discs, you know. Mm-hmm. It's just a one other like part of it.
I agree with Matt. Like it's, there's reasons that digital might be a barrier for some people, and choice is always king. Right. Like I've moved to digital. I used to be a physical person. The convenience won me over, but there's pros and cons to both. I think one interesting thing about like, there's a lot of pros for digital for publishers, like for small ones, as the share grows, I think we'd probably say like not that much for big publisher, but like the cost and like the logistics of shipping and producing the discs and, you know, splitting those costs and the retailer cuts and stuff like that. But especially like I can't count how many times in the last couple of years I've seen these PSAs, sometimes even from the developers themselves, like this game's out in the wild. There's spoilers out there. We're so sorry. We don't want anyone spoiled. Please be considerate. Like it's probably easier to control that worldwide release in a digital format. And I know that's not like, I'm not saying that trumps people's choice to own a digital or a physical copy and hold it in their hands, but that wouldn't be an issue. So I could certainly see why consumers are going that way and why publishers and developers really like it too.
Yeah, it's all part of the calculus, right? And you're trying to do the best for your particular game, and sometimes that means a physical release. But you also have to have a retailer community that's willing to bring that game in. And you know, retailers have gotten much more selective. They've brought in fewer and fewer copies day one, hoping, you know, like, you know, instead of maybe they would have brought in 12 5 years ago. Now they're going to bring in 3 and see if they can sell through those 3 copies and then expect you to be able to replenish right away. Right. So, and if you can't, then your sales rankings fall. And then all of a sudden you get cut off a replen and you don't have distribution anymore. Like these are some of like the mechanics of trying to bring physical products to retail that a lot of people don't think about. And just the complications around it. And And like you said, it's a lack of control. Like a digital release, you control, you have much more control as a publisher about where it goes, when it goes, pricing, promotional plans, all that stuff. You can have a little bit more of a finger on. So yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's like you give copies to Walmart, right? And then Walmart either puts them out early, right? Or, you know, maybe release day comes and they never bring them out of the back, right? I mean, that's
You know, that impacts your rankings, and then your rankings determine your replenishment, and it just it gets complicated. You need to, and then of course you need an organization of folks to like watch that stuff. Not, and so it's not just the margin on the physical production of the disc. It's all the people involved. It's the hours. It's the focus. Yeah, it's a big thing to try to bring physical to retail. And if you're talking about, you know, hey, we're going to sell 25,000 extra copies than we would otherwise, you know, then you have to go like, well, is that really worth it?
Yeah.
And that's where the math gets kind of sticky.
Well, and the reality is that if people were overwhelmingly rejecting digital to stick physical, then you wouldn't see this trend occurring, right? So like the business is kind of chasing the business, for lack of a better term. And I know, like, as somebody who used to be really hardcore, like, I love my physical games and I'll never give them up, I keep finding, new releases where I go, like, I don't want to go to a GameStop or Best Buy today to go pick this, or tomorrow to go pick this game up new if they've got a copy, and then I'll bring it home, and then it'll still take an hour to install an update, versus if I had just bought it digitally or pre-ordered it digitally, I could preload, it could be ready for me when I get off work. You know, I mean,
and you know, there's going to be some versions of those digital games that have all the extra goodies in there, and it's just a click away.
I'm still strong on that one, but we'll see.
So you know what, like Matt kind of brought something up in the back of my head that I want to just briefly talk about, and it's that we're sitting here talking about the advent of digital sales, right? Like, physical games aren't dying. Like, they're not going anywhere, at least not anytime soon. There's still a market for things like collector's editions with statues. You can see I've got some behind me. Now, some of these collector's editions do come with digital codes now, as opposed to like physical games. And, you know, people at, you know, I've seen this happen several times over the past few years, and people act indignant when it happens. But at this point, like, I don't think anybody should be surprised. Like, if you look at the digital to physical split, like, the gap is only growing wider. So, you know, like physical isn't going anywhere yet. Will it go away someday? Yeah, I think it probably will, as technology evolves. But that may not even happen in our lifetimes, or at least like near the very end of our lifetimes. And at that point, none of us is going to be worried about physical versus digital games. And if you are, you need to get into therapy, because
that was the last thing I wanted to ask Matt on this topic, I guess, hopefully there's no articles written tomorrow that Matt Piscatella says on podcast that physical games are dead. But I think you mentioned a while ago, like 2027, 2028. But one thing I was curious about, like, we haven't seen it materialize yet. I think so Xbox, they've been talking, like, I think at their business update when they talked about their new multi-platform strategy, they mentioned there's new hardware coming this holiday. They didn't specify what, but we know from the leaked court documents, I don't know if they were leaked or just shown, at some point they had an all digital Series X that they were working on. I don't know if that's still happening. Assuming that it is, and their Series S is all digital, like, obviously Microsoft's heavily in on that space, but like, you can kind of, you know, read the writing on the wall. And with Best Buy and Target, I think just today, announcing they're removing physical, they had to clarify, both of them had to clarify because it caused an uproar, but, you know, movies and TV are gone from their storefront in the physical presence. I think they're still selling them online. It seems like games are coming, but they're just a few years behind. So I guess I'm curious, like, it sounds like your guess maybe is like 27, 28, like, do next-gen systems, probably Nintendo, but like, specifically for like Sony and Microsoft, do the next gen big boy boxes, are they digital only? Do they have a disc drive?
So my read is that at least Sony, they'll have an option. Now, how widely distributed that option is, say it's an attachable physical media reader? Like, how widely distributed is that? How many units actually get sold, right? So it's probably going to be a transition year. I could see Microsoft leaning all in to all digital sooner rather than later. Mm-hmm. And Nintendo has at least one more gen, I think. And then we'll see what they do. Like, trying to predict what Nintendo's going to do is always kind of a a fool's errand, right? But I think ultimately what it's going to come down to is physical is going to be around so long as there's enough of a market to make it viable. Mm-hmm. And by the time it does go away, it's because so few people want it that most people might not even know it's happened. It'll always be a demand-driven thing until the demand becomes at a point where it just doesn't make sense to keep it going. Now, who knows what that, if that's actually 10 years, if it's 15 years, whatever. But I mean, eventually it's going to happen. But when it does, at that point, I don't know if anyone's really going to care. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
it'll be like a small vocal group of people who were really mad about it, but
it's like a really different situation from, we keep talking about like movies and TV or music. Like, those formats have different quality differences, right? Like, your digital bitrate on streaming video on movies and television is not as good as what you get on a 4K disc. Granted, no one is buying 4K discs other than me these days, but or same, like, you know, like a vinyl record, it just sounds different, better or worse, depending on the digital file format. But like games, it's like you're getting the exact same thing, physical or digital. Like, that's a big piece removed when you talk about like hanging on to that old format. So
yeah, it's not like cloud, which, you know, cloud is fine for what it is, but it is a lesser experience than if you have a native running piece of software, right? So that transition is not going to come anywhere near as fast as some people are saying, and it might not really ever happen for some of the more complex games. I mean, we'll have to see. We're a long way from that. But like you said, if it's a similar play experience on a device running code natively, you know, convenience is going to be king, and an easily clickable solution is going to be the one that wins for most people. But we'll see. Who knows, man? Things are weird.
Yeah. It's weird because, like, kind of going back to, like you said that if there continues to be a market that you will continue to see physical games, and it just seems like it's hard for people to grasp on to the idea that the thing that they love and the way that they prefer to do things might be in the minority, despite that being what used to be normal. And like, in a funny way, not to use this as a perfect transition, but I've kind of seen a lot of the same conversations going on around like the console market versus like other like avenues of the gaming industry. That, like, you recently pointed out that the traditional console market seems to mostly be static at this point, versus most of the growth in the industry has come outside of the console market. And people had some opinions about the fact that you would dare say such a thing.
Can I lean into that one, Derek, as well? Because I was like, I didn't want to hog the mic, but that was one of the main points I wanted to hit on here too, is I read a really good article. I think it was on gamesindustry.biz. This was months ago. It was around the time all the Xbox drama was happening. But they brought up some really good points, and I don't remember all the hard numbers. Matt would know them better. But the crux of it is that, like, consoles aren't dying, but they aren't growing. Like, when you look at the install base overall for consoles, like this gen grow, like the trajectory versus like PS4, Xbox One era, Switch is kind of one foot in both. And even back to like the PS3 360 era, like, I don't know whether it's 150 million consoles per generation, 200 million, like, it's the same amount of console users, but game development costs are doubling or tripling, like the amount of money to make these games. So you're selling the products to the same amount of people, but they costed three times as much to make. So to make that money back, okay, you can raise the rates, but like, yeah, sure, in Canada, we've gone from $60 a game to $95 a game in a single gen. But like, it seems like you can't pull it off in the US, right? It's gone from 60 to 70. So they can, you know, increase the unit price. And they've obviously got creative with like the early access $100 premium editions. That sounds like they're selling quite well. And they can give you the game for free and get you to buy the DLC and the seasons and the add-ons. But like, like we talk about the industry all the time, nothing in the industry seems sustainable. And it feels like this isn't sustainable either. So I'm just curious to get Matt's take on, like, you know, if consoles are flat, like, where do we see them going next gen? Do you think it's going to be more of the same? Are we going to see an eventual decline? And like, what are games going to have to do to, you know, unless they drop the budget, like, what are they going to have to do to kind of make them viable still?
A small question.
Sorry. Right. You can pick one piece of that and go, yeah, that's a lot there.
No, it's cool. The console audience is the console audience, and it's fine. Like, it's a great audience. These are the most dedicated players. These are the biggest spenders. Like, these are the people most invested that tell their family and friends what to play, right? So that console business is not going anywhere. Like, having a, it's like people left that love cars looking to go buy that really nice car. Like, you could buy any car, but people are going to overinvest in a car if they really like cars. It's the same thing with console gaming or PC gaming. People that really love games are going to invest in the better premium experience. That's not going to go anywhere. But the problem, like you said, is the elevating cost. And you can offset that also, like you said, with a little bit higher pricing, although that's not really sticking as well as it has in prior generations. You can do MTX add-on DLC. The difference this time, though, what I think is really gumming up the works is now you have these forever games. You have the Grand Theft Auto, Call of Duty, Minecraft, Fortnite, Roblox group. And they are taking so much player time and attention and dollars, right? Because it's so easy just to go play that. Because they keep getting updated and people have social connections in there. They have in-game stuff that they've either earned or bought. Like, there's a lot of ties to that. And so any new game coming out, it's not only competing against other new games into the window, like Dragon's Dogma is not just competing against, say, Helldivers for an audience. I mean, the biggest competition for any new game is Fortnite, right? And how do you do that as well? So you have to expand the avenues to bring in players and attention. And Sony's going to PC, Microsoft's taking its product or content to other platforms. Nintendo's kind of in a weird place because they have their new thing coming out. So of course they're not going to do that quite yet. But look, 10 years down the road, will they start? I mean, they might have to, right? It depends on what happens with these forever games and with these more dedicated players. So there's a lot of trying to figure out what the hell to do when you have a group of products that have been in the market for 10 years or more and are showing no signs of slowing down. Like, how do you compete with a game that has that kind of gravitational pull to it if you have a new game? And so you can attract an audience, but, you know, it's really tough to do. And if your game is not on stinking point, if your game is not Helldivers or Dragon's Dogma 2, your road is a lot tougher. Your upside potential is really, really has a ceiling if you're not one of those premier products, right? And that's the challenge.
When I feel like MMOs, specifically MMORPGs, are where you see that more starkly than just about anything else, I think. Like, if you look at World of Warcraft and Final Fantasy XIV, which are the two dominant forces in MMORPGs, right? I think they, like, Derek, correct me if I'm wrong, you may or may not know, but like, they bounce back and forth between who has more subscribers pretty regularly, I believe.
Yeah, I mean, from what we can tell, like, I think World of Warcraft is a little bit more secretive about, like, active subscriber counts, but, like, yeah, it's those two. It used to be that there was World of Warcraft, but then there was a dozen other ongoing MMOs at any given time that all had healthy player bases. And
Final Fantasy XIV was that one unicorn that kind of was able to not topple World of Warcraft, but run neck and neck with it. And so they're the two top MMORPGs in the world right now. And I think they each have respectively anywhere around 30 million active subs at any time, which is fucking nuts. I believe the third, I can't remember the name of the game, but it's not even a quarter of that. When you look at Destiny 2, like people love to rag on Destiny 2 right now. Like there's nobody that hates Destiny 2 more than a Destiny 2 fan, I like to say. But at the same time, Jeff, real quick. I was just going to say, at the same time, does it have any competition at all? No, not really. I mean, there's Borderlands 3, I think, tried to do what Destiny 2 was doing, and nobody talks about Borderlands 3 anymore. There simply isn't room. There's room for one or two of these games at the top of the pile and nothing fucking else.
It's so funny that you say that, because like you bring up like World of Warcraft and Final Fantasy 14 having like 30 million active subs, I think, right? And you need to add a whole other zero onto the end of that number to get close to Fortnite numbers. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, yep. It just goes to show how far outside the norm this tiny handful of games that soak up so much of the market. It kind of drives me crazy, because we talk about like growth in the industry and we talk about how big the industry is and how hot service games are. And it's like five or six games that are all of that. And it feels like the only set of data where we look at such blatant outliers and treat them as a meaningful part of the data for most people, rather than cutting them out and going, okay, everything that's not those five games, that's the industry you're actually competing in.
It's no secret, Fortnite is not my kind of game. I'm not a Fortnite fan. I'm certainly not an Epic Games fan, and I'm most certainly not a Tim Sweeney fan. But I will say that
Huge Ariana Grande fan, though.
Right, absolutely. And also a huge Taylor Swift fan. You know, who would have thought? I'm not really a Taylor Swift fan. But I will give Epic Games this. They know how to make a game that has remained compelling for what? 6 or 7 years? Like, there is no one, and they're better at Bungie than this.
Yeah, you
they're
put Goku and PUBG, that's how you do
like,
it.
Like, seriously, Epic Games knows how. Like, do you remember when that big crack appeared in the sky in Fortnite? Yeah, Matt knows what I'm talking about. And it was literally all anyone was talking about. My son, who was like 14 at the time, 13 or 14, the only thing kids at his school were talking about, the only thing was that big crack in the sky and what the hell it was. Jeff, go ahead.
No, finish.
I was just going to say that, like, I don't see, like, Apex Legends is a popular game. And for a little while, it looked like it might have, like, you know, dethroned Fortnite. We all remember that. Like, Apex Legends came out of nowhere, and all of a sudden, everybody's like, holy shit, is this the Fortnite killer? It wasn't the Fortnite killer. I have not seen a game that is able to compel its fan base, its player base, the way that Fortnite can. And Matt, I guess I was wondering, like, how do you break through that? Is Fortnite so entrenched? Like, Jeff, go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Jeff.
No, it's all right. Yeah, I want to hear Matt's take too. I just wanted to get in real quickly. Because it's basically the same thing I was going to say. And I was thinking about it after what Matt was just saying, you know, with all these eating up the market share, like, it seems like it's not even good enough to be as good as them, right? Because it feels like the established players have the advantage. You can make a Fortnite clone and it can be as good as Fortnite, but why would you leave Fortnite? Why would you make a lateral move when you're already so invested in that previous game, whether it's like items that you own or progression or your social network or friends? Like, you have to not be as good. You need to be better. And you also need to have some kind of unique hook, it feels like, to pull people out of those. Because otherwise, why am I going to leave the thing that I'm so comfortable with? And I think that's when you just asked Matt, like, you know, how do you break through that? I think that to me is like also a good question. Like, how do you not just match them, but how do you surpass them? And how do you
compete?
Away?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we haven't even mentioned games like Genshin or Monopoly Go. Like, Monopoly Go is one of the biggest reasons why video game content is holding on as well as it is this year, because it did 2 billion in 10 months. That's a whole different topic.
But I only heard about this game from Kyle Bossman's delayed input a weeks ago.
Amazing. But yeah, we're not even talking about those kind of games. We're just talking about this particular world. So yeah, either you have to come out with something that's more viral, bigger, better, because it can't just be small and good. It's got to be big and good and have its own gravitational pull. Or you have to wait for one of the established players to really screw up. And the stakes are so high that happening is pretty unlikely. And it kind of goes back a little bit to that console conversation we were having. The console audience is continuing to get older and a little more affluent. It goes with being a little bit older, because the younger audiences are playing Fortnite, Minecraft, Roblox through really accessible, whatever they have on hand, whether it's their laptop, whether it's a PC, whether it's a mobile device, whatever they have, they're using to access these games. And these are the games they live in. Their social networks are in these games. Like, all of their connectivity to their friends are in these three games, right? And so how do you break that unless the entirety of someone's social circle decides at the same time we're all going to move to this other game, right? That's like, this is the key biggest question and the biggest challenge facing all developers now. It's like, okay, I'm not just competing about other games launching this holiday. If I've got a game in November, how the hell do I compete with Fortnite and GTA? And I don't have the answer to that. I don't know. Thank God I don't need to have it, because
especially since
huge question.
Like, Fortnite is free to play. All the cool skins and stuff you pay for, but you can literally just go download Fortnite for your kid for free.
That's how they get you.
It is. And you could spend as much as you do for a whole year. Like, a game right now costs what, like $70 on average right now for like a big AAA game.
Yeah.
You could spend if you're a parent, you could spend $140 a year and get all kinds of cool shit in Fortnite for your kid. All kinds of cool shit. Skins and all kinds of crazy shit. And that is an extremely compelling business model. And yeah,
the two biggest products last Christmas weren't any particular game or console. It was Fortnite gift cards and Roblox gift cards. Like, those are the two hottest selling items. You know what I mean? Like, it's a paradigm shift.
Yeah.
Like, kids aren't asking for games. They're asking for Fortnite and Roblox cards. And so, okay, like,
I feel like at least in our circles, Roblox flies under the radar because that game is huge and we don't ever talk about it. But like,
we never talk. I barely know what the fuck it is.
Like, I just found out there's an entire flight simulator within Roblox, with real ATC. Like, I'm doing
it. Like, Jeff is going to become a Roblox player.
I'm not, but like, I so many people on the network that I'm flying on come over from Roblox, and I'm just like, there's this whole subcommunity. Like, it just blew my mind that this platform is so massive. And I'm like really interested to see what happens when Grand Theft Auto 6 finally launches. Like,
I'm terrified. Frankly,
the destruction that will wreak on the industry.
Me too.
Next year is going to be the least predictable year, I feel like.
Like, so I guess what I'm getting at is, you know, Matt, you made a really interesting point when you talked about what the two biggest selling, you know, gaming related holiday items were. What does this mean for single player games going forward? Like probably nothing bad, but at the same time, like, it's got to get big publishers and developers thinking about, you know, how can we replicate that success? And like, take a company like what's a good example? Capcom or Square, like games that usually make one, like, you know, as if like, let's put Final Fantasy 14 aside for a minute. Let's put, like, you know, Exo Prime. Okay, I'm not gonna put Exo Primal in the same category as Final Fantasy 14, but you know what I mean. Two companies, two big developers / publishers that are known for their single player offerings, right? How do they look at how are companies like that looking at Fortnite right now and Roblox and thinking, okay, it's not that things are bad for us. In fact, things are very good for us, but how can we take that business model and apply it to what we do, which is essentially mostly single player games, and start to leech off of some of that success? I guess what I'm asking is, are we going to start to see those influences seep into single player games as well?
I think we have, to a great extent. And I think what we're going to continue to see is not necessarily fewer, but fewer big single player games. You're still going to have your prestige studios making these kind of games because they sell. And there's always going to be an audience for a single player narrative experience. But, you know, folks are going to have to open their minds a little bit and look for games from non-traditionally AAA type studios to have the best narrative experiences. That's going to take time, and it's taking time to kind of transition. I think what the biggest challenge for a narrative studio right now when they're putting out a new game is that because everyone and their mom started playing video games in 20 and 21, and they put all of the hours they possibly could into those windows in like the very developed gaming markets, we know what our ceiling is for an engagement. And the engagement figures have actually held relatively close to those all-time peaks. So it's a zero-sum market now for players and hours and eyeballs. And so you're fighting now. You're no longer having this thing where you're coming to market thinking, okay, I can discover a market that's basically underserved or an audience that isn't quite playing as much and get some organic growth. No, you actually have to take attention away from other games. And I think that's the challenge and what the marketing challenge really is. You're still going to see them. Single player games are still going to be very successful. But it's just going to be, you're going to have to widen the horizon, open the aperture of the focus to try to find more of those types of experiences. And people will over time.
Well, and I don't
but think yeah, it's going to be tough.
Well, I don't think this is a bad thing, because do you know who I think like benefits the most from that is indie studios. Indies, like I have played so many indie games that have crafted some of the finest narrative experiences that I've ever had. And a really good example of this, Derek, is Chained Echoes. Chained Echoes was an incredible,
kind of an outlier in terms of like how realistic it is for most indie teams to put out something as big as Chained Echoes. But
true. But especially considering that was one guy who made that game. But
like the indie world is like chock full of these kind of single player, like heavily narrative, you know, very creative experiences.
But you got to be able to find them. Like the storefronts are trash, especially the eShop. I went on eShop, I bought a Switch game in like 2 years. I was like, I'm just going to go to the store and look for something. And I just gave up. I fucking shut them off.
Pure garbage.
Yeah, that's the challenge. Discoverability is so hard. So, you know, you've heard a little conversation about this out there right now about curation and how important curation is going to be, especially as generative AI continues to make the internet worse. Finding people you trust to come up with a curated list of these types of experiences, like that's going to become more and more important because, there's so much crap. Try to sift through to find these gems, and that's like that's a huge problem.
But
on the plus side, we have so many people making so many of these great games, it's just a question of finding the audience for them. It's not like we're not having like this
as a player and consumer and you're never running out, right? Like not if you're willing to buy things that don't come from the same five companies. So
yeah, but you'll find a game and you might come to a game 6 months late going like, what the hell? I didn't even know this came out. Like, this is great. I had no idea this existed. That's a little bit of the challenge right now, too.
So, Matt, I wanted to kind of shift the perspective a little bit. And I want to talk about a game that came out recently that is underperforming and everyone's freaking out about it. And that game is Final Fantasy
VII. Reset the fucking clock.
So can we, Matt, can we please explain to people why this guy is not falling?
It's like, fine. The comparable game released at the onset of the pandemic, it was boosted well beyond any reasonable expectation for the game. This game is performing very well on its own merit. Comparing to a game that released in March of 20 is not a good idea for any game.
When you also think about the sequels never outsell the game that preceded them. Almost never.
It can happen. It can happen, but it's not the most common for a hit, at least. But you know, you'll see games that do better. Once an audience is established, it can grow, but it's fine. It's fine.
People need to calm down. Like,
calm I think down. It doesn't be help. Better.
It doesn't help that a lot of these companies, like Square Enix, famously seems to have very off like internal expectations. So you get games like Final Fantasy 16, Final Fantasy 7 Rebirth that like sell objectively pretty well and probably more than make their money back. But then Square has to put out and say like, well, it's selling under our expectations. Well, you your expectations are always bizarre.
Well, I don't remember if I said it on the show or in the Discord server, but I was like, you know, game budgets be damned. We should figure out a way to make games where, like, if you sell a million copies, that should be very good. That should be a big success. If your game sells a million copies.
That used to be the number for big success. And now games will sell 3-4 million copies and EA will say that is a flop.
I will never forget when Square Enix was like, well, the Tomb Raider reboot didn't sell 10 million copies, so it's a disappointment. It's like, guys, what the... Guys, like, come on. Like, Final Fantasy 16 has sold about, I think, roughly 4 or 5 million, like around 5 million copies, I think, is where this thing is going to top off. And that is more than most games could possibly dream of. But the problem is that these games are like Rebirth. The problem is that these games are not selling. The problem is that these developers have wildly, wildly overexcited expectations.
Just as a tiny point of correction, it's definitely not the developers. It's definitely higher up in
you know
on
what
the
I
publisher
mean. Like,
side.
Like, right. Like Square publishes their own games, right? So sure. The money at Square at the top is like, well, you know, Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, we expected 20 million sales, and this is simply not in line with our expectations. Like, guys, maybe your expectations were a little unrealistic, and so I've seen the reason I bring this up, Matt, is because you, unlike almost any of these other guys on social media, you actually know what you're talking about, and people should listen to you, and the discourse I have seen about this has just been nothing short of depressing and hilarious at the same time.
Yeah, this is a franchise I don't like to talk about publicly because you just can't win.
Their fans suck. Final Fantasy about fans it. Suck. Yeah, they do.
Well, and it's just like, you know, without knowing the specific expectations, without knowing the assumptions behind the expectations, like you don't really know. Even if a game is, if they announce a game underperforms or overperforms, you don't know exactly what metrics it under or overperformed or what assumptions led to that performance. And so it gives you no guidance as to what the next steps for the franchise might be. And that's what it ultimately comes down to, people being insecure about the future of this franchise they love. And I get it. Like, if you're a real fan of a franchise, you want to see it healthy. You want to see it succeed. So you keep enjoying that franchise over time. This is a franchise that's not going anywhere. It's a foundational video game franchise. It is its own massive entity that's going to be fine no matter what.
And
you're going to need to have three ultimate failures before anything bad happens to this franchise long term. It is that important.
And developers can undervalue their franchises as well, right? Like, a good example is the Pixel Remasters. Like, Square Enix touted about all of those, all said across all the platforms, they sold about 1 million, and Square was like, oh man, look how good these sold. And it's like, well, what were you thinking they were going to sell? Like, you know, and Square particularly, the reason I keep bringing up Square is that they are particularly egregiously guilty of either wildly overestimating or wildly underestimating what their games are going to sell. And I don't understand why they continue to do this.
Yeah, it's tough to figure out without understanding the assumptions behind it. And I wouldn't want to speculate on what those might be or what those drivers might be for a publisher or a particular game. I just know looking at what's going on with this franchise, like, I'm not worried about it. I'm looking at what I'm seeing. I'm like, okay, that's about right. That seems like about what it should be doing. So like, I haven't had any concerns or I haven't spent any furrowed brow moments looking at this game. Some other ones, different story, but this one, no, it's fine. It's just, it'll still be, you know, it'll end up being probably one of the best selling games of the year of some magnitude.
Probably. And if it's not, it's, you know, fine too.
I feel like it doesn't help when a lot of random folks on the internet who are often quick to fire off their opinions despite their lack of like knowledge or experience need to chime in and set a narrative. I remember this great example of, to me, this is like one of the most memorable examples in recent history of like why people need to not chime in on financial results is I remember there was like a quarterly Square Enix results, like not long after, or maybe right after Final Fantasy 16 came out. And it was like horrible. And everybody was like, see, Final Fantasy 16 was a huge flop. And it turns out that it's because they put like the entire previous year's worth of Amort, right, on development costs into that one quarter. And it's just an accounting flubbery, right? Of like, I don't know why you would choose to do that, but they chose to do it instead of spreading it out over the year. They condensed it all into one quarter, and everybody was yelling over shit they didn't understand. They couldn't even describe amortization to you if you asked them. And this is such a great example of like, sometimes it feels like talking about financial results with people on the internet is itself a losing game.
I don't do it.
No. Our deepest sympathies to Matt. I got one more quick one I wanted to lob unless someone else had something. Yeah. This one's an easy. It's a fastball down the middle for Matt. PS5 Pro. Like what? I've been reading like, okay, Sony's really pushing this. They're trying to get developers excited. And I've also read like, developers don't really understand why this is happening. And the consumers seem to be saying, do we need that? So, I mean, I'm a techie, like, you know, I want the best of the best. I want to play my games at the highest resolution. I'm going to buy it. But like, just curious, like your take, like, is this going to be popular? Like, I have no idea how the PS4 Pro sold even.
Yeah, it doesn't need to be. I mean, the iterative versions that come out later in a cycle or on the second half of a platform cycle, they're really best to stabilize pricing, to make sure that the average selling price of that platform stays at a relatively higher level, to help with the profitability of it. So, I mean, it's meant to do that. It's meant to stabilize the demand curve, get those people like yourself who are, you know, itching for the next thing, but you know, the next thing really isn't for another 3 or 4 years. Give them something to be excited about. It's not meant to like reset curves or blow away expectations. It's meant to be a supplemental, iterative, nice to have to keep momentum going. And that's, you know, if this thing is real, that's probably what it'll end up doing. You know, you're not going to sell millions and millions and millions. You're going to sell enough to placate your most dedicated fans, and you're going to do it at a little bit of a higher price point and make sure that the energy and momentum remains with the platform. And if it does that, it's a success. So yeah, I'd expect to do that. Or if Xbox, if their rumored device is real, the same kind of thing, just kind of help that really enthusiastic core have something to be excited about, have something to tell their friends and family about, as influencers in their own social circles and drive behavior that way. So yeah, it's fine. It's cool. It'd be more necessary if, say, Nintendo had a new device this year, but they don't. So
yeah, that changing certainly didn't fuck up any forecasts, huh?
Right. So, you know, it's cool. It's fine. It's fine. That's basically where I'm at on the iterative boxes. Like, yeah. A little overhyped probably in their potential, both in their performance and in their selling potential in some parts of the internet. So I don't know. It's cool though. I'm excited to see what it is. I don't know if it's actually going to do anything, but I'm excited to see what it is.
It's a box. It plays video games.
I mean, if it's smaller and it doesn't have the stupid stand, I'm in.
Oh my God, that stand. Well, that might be the one thing that does it for me.
Yeah, we'll see if it's digital only or physical digital or whatever they do there too. It's kind of, we'll see what happens.
I'll live. As we get closer to the end of the show, we've got maybe 5 minutes left. I do have a question for Matt. So the Steam Deck kind of came out and was a huge success. Like I don't think anybody could call the Steam Deck anything but a huge success at this point. And it's finally like that piece of hardware that really stuck, because they're like, you know, we had the Steam machines and those were a massive dud. Yeah. The old Steam machines. Especially since none of them were actually made in-house by Valve. But now with the success of the Steam Deck, Matt, is it time for Valve to, or do you think they are looking at reintroducing a Steam machine that is simply made in-house by them, and acts as basically a PC box that you could stick under your Brittany, Jesus Christ. Brittany says Steam machines just sounds like John farting in the hot tub. I mean, yeah, for sure. But Matt, what do you
think? Suddenly I'm looking less forward to the hot tub stream at the charity event.
Who said you're invited? This shit literally can't happen without you. Matt, go ahead.
Yeah, I think what they're going to do is, you know, they have their docking system for the deck. I think that's going to be the way they try to bring this device be more of a hybrid, have the Steam Deck be the device with a docking system for displays if people choose to do that. I think that's probably going to be the way they go and keep it simple. I would really like to see them bring these devices to retailers and give people a not just direct way of doing it. And like you said, this is a success. It is a new, like, the portable PC landscape. It's a, you know, there have been other devices, but none of them really sold at all. This is basically a new and developing and exciting part of the industry. We have Asus in the mix. We have MSI in the mix. We have Lenovo. We have other people on the way, all of them with a Windows 11 based device. And those really aren't great for this purpose. So it is a Steam, or it's a Valve dominated market at the moment. And so, you know, we'll see where they take it, but it is a super exciting one. And I'm really, you know, this has the potential of really impacting the overall market in a big way once it breaks more into mainstream, because right now it is still a very much an enthusiast device.
Do you think?
I mean, that'd be my read on it, at least.
And it's cool to me, like, it opens up the portable market for certain publishers that, like, you know, there's been talk about, like, I guess Phil Spencer wants a portable Xbox, and, you know, Sony's tried with the Vita, but, like, Sony's publishing their games on PC now, and with the Steam Deck, like, you can now have handheld PS5 game on a different platform, but, like, Sony can still sell those games to that market, like you said, Matt, like a growing market, a new market. So I think that's interesting there too.
Yeah, it's super exciting for the hybrid potential of just content in general. And because the majority of players play across two or more device types, just because the Steam Deck succeeds doesn't mean that the console market's going to take a hit. Like, it's actually a synergistic. They do kind of work together in a lot of ways, because, again, it's all about access to content, making it really easy for people to play what they want, where they want, when they want, with who they want. And that's kind of what this device is helping facilitate as well.
So obviously the Steam machines were a huge failure and Valve rightfully shuttered them. You don't see a similar fate for the Steam Deck. You think this is here to stay?
Oh, I think absolutely. And I think they're only going to improve it and make it an easier connection for screens or displays over time. Like, yeah, this is it's done pretty darn well, and they basically own this market at the moment that everyone wants a piece of. So it's a pretty exciting space.
Let me ask you this, Matt. Do you think it would be doing as well as it is if not for the existence of the Switch? Because I feel like the Switch is the console that finally, like, I think the Switch is like that first real hybrid console. And like, you know, if you look at the turnaround from the Wii U to the Switch, like, it's unreal, right? Like, it's wild. And, you know, before we were for years, everybody was saying, well, I can't wait for this to come to Switch. I can't wait for this to come to Switch. Like, I can't wait for this. I did that shit all the time. I can't wait for this to come to Switch. And do you feel as though Switch and the Switch's popularity kind of paved the way for like, do you think Valve would have even considered the Steam Deck if not for the runaway success of the Switch?
I mean, that's probably the better question. Were their eyes open to the potential of this kind of device by what Switch did? Maybe. Sure didn't hurt. Yeah. When consumers showed so much enthusiasm for a hybrid type device, I'm sure it really helped grease the wheels of development and getting the funding for it. So, but I don't know for sure, but geez, like, the No, I mean, who expected Switch to, I mean, it's going to exceed PS2 in the US some point this year.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think a lot of people would have expected that. So,
so yeah, it is going to be the highest selling console of all time this year. Like,
well, it'll in the US.
In the worldwide.
And,
I think,
and
right?
if you exclude things like GBA, like if you make it devices that are primarily console or talked about to be console. Yeah. Anyways, all kind of qualifiers, but yeah, it's very likely to exceed PS2 at some point this summer in the US. We'll see.
All right. Well, we are exactly at 10:30. So it is time to wrap up. Matt, it's been way too long, man. I'm so glad you decided to come on tonight.
Yeah, I want to go talk more about steak fries.
So let me tell you, like, Finn was dead ass wrong when he said that steak fries aren't, like, I have had some crispy, delicious steak fries.
Crispy on the outside, fluffy on the inside. I mean, this is steak fry conundrum.
You can't microwave frozen steak fries. Like, that must be what he's doing. I don't know what else.
Yeah,
to say.
Like, I don't know what else to tell him. But I have absolutely had steak fries that you break it apart and like there's an audible like crunch, and then you have the steam wafted up from the
in like an air fryer or a countertop convection oven.
Oh yeah, Finn, I love you, man. Finn, I love you, man. But you're just. You're dead ass fucking wrong about steak fries, my man. Like
he has to be wrong about something eventually.
He's wrong about so much, but steak fries, he's not here to defend himself. So I'll say whatever I want. God damn it, Matt, you got me thinking about steak fries now and how much I want to, there's an Irish or not Irish, but there's an English pub like 3 miles away that makes incredible fish and chips. And
do they have a washing machine? Like, you can take clothes over.
They don't, unfortunately. Dude, I fucking reek. I cannot wait to... Vicky was able to bring some clothes home from the laundromat, so I cannot wait to go take a
I've been laughing. It's just, it's not fair the amount of, like, catastrophic home damage this podcast has been going through. I haven't had a bathroom in my house for a month. Britt just had horrible tornado damage. You know, your shower sprays poop at you, and you don't have a washing machine.
Like, I mean, dude, if I want to do anything, but I'll say a number one, I'll be delicate. I got to drive down the street to the gas station. Like, it sucks. It sucks. But we'll go and wrap it up here. Matt, always a pleasure. I hope you come back on soon. I hope we don't wait so long next time.
Oh, it's always fun to chat. Yeah. Like, it's been like, what, 4 years?
Probably it's been a way, it more often way too long. Way too long. Let's
great chatting you guys. Great seeing everybody again.
Absolutely, Matt. Seriously. And guys, you can find him at Matt Piscatella on Twitter. He's incredibly smart.
Don't do it.
Or you know what? Matt doesn't want you to follow him, so don't do that.
Get off of Twitter. Go live your life. Go play some video games, man.
Go home and be a family.
Go be a family man.
Short.
Pet a dog, mow your lawn.
Wear 2-inch inseams. Just go live.
Absolutely.
Oh yeah.
we'll go and get out of here. Thanks for sticking around, everyone. We had a nice lively chat tonight. I always like to see that. And as always, remember that kindness costs nothing. We'll see you next week.